This week on the Inside Flap.
Because so much of our money was going to CDs, right? Wow. And then now it was all free. And I had like one friend who was smart enough to think, this could be bad for the artist. We're all like, no, what? Come on, that's crazy. Yeah. It's like the radio. It's gotta be good. Now I'm over here sending, you know, frantic emails to my publisher. I'm like, did you see this piracy site? It's awful, it's terrible. Shut it down.
And there, Dave is parked. It's like Dave was in the middle of backing up and then lost interest in backing up.
Right.
And then he just stopped his car.
I was at point two of a 3-point turn.
That's it, exactly.
And I guess you get in and you're like, Dave, what are you doing? There's a car
there
right
there. There was a car, like a white Tesla, just sitting there waiting for them.
He just was just sitting there.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room to my slight right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the couch to my left, on the other side of Nelson the dog, that's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior, thank you for joining us, and welcome to
The Inside Flap
Book Podcast, episode 246. Got a great show for you today. Breaking news, Andrew.
So I was looking up some of our show stats, and I saw one site basically indicates that we are in the top 2.5% of all podcasts.
Of all podcasts?
That's right, 2.5%. So,
Well, there are a lot of podcasts out there.
There are a lot of podcasts.
I saw it there in writing. So
if you saw it, it must be true.
It must be true, Andrew. It must be true. It must be true.
What other podcast is garnering guests like the guest we have tonight, Scott Carson, a.k.a. Michael Carita? He talks to us all about his new book, Lost Man's Lane. Listen, let me tell you something. This book is one of my favorites. Definitely one of my top, and the other book that I'm going to recommend is another one of my favorites, but literally one of my favorite books this year, and a favorite book I've read in a long, long time. Such a good book, Lost Man's Lane, and just a great guy to chat with. We'll have that conversation for you in just a bit, but first, Laura and I just got back from our trip to, in fact, when I say just got back, I mean, we got in late last night from our trip to good old San Diego. Andrew, have you ever spent any time in San Diego?
Why, yes. I think it's been like 5 years.
Oh, that's not long.
But yeah. We took a spring break trip about the same time.
Oh. Did you...
Where'd you guys stay? Coronado Island?
We stayed just north of San Diego.
La Jolla?
Some fancy hotel on some like...
La Jolla's fancier.
Some super fancy golf course.
Oh,
Torrey Pines.
Probably, yeah.
That's the golf course where they have like the U.S. Open.
When they actually were having the LPGA tournament while we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be Torrey Pines.
So we could watch it from our hotel room.
Wow. It's beautiful in that area. Yeah.
We stayed at an Airbnb in Hillcrest.
Hillcrest.
Yeah. The delightful community of Hillcrest. And in fact, we just chatted with Don Winslow today about that, as he is also from San Diego, but
name dropping.
Did I hurt your foot when I dropped that name? Sorry about that. So day one, we had all kinds of stuff planned out to do, but the first day, they were calling for 25-mile-an-hour wind gusts and rain on and off all day. So we're like, okay, well, why don't we, since we had this world-class, and I know, Andrew, you like to throw around terms like world-class all the time, but the San Diego Zoo, which is right next to where we're staying, like I remember growing up and watching Jack Hanna come on the Tonight Show with these crazy animals.
Oh, yeah.
And,
was he with the San Diego Zoo?
Yes, he was with the San Diego, and later on, and he would come on with Johnny Carson, and later on with Jay Leno, it was Joan Embry, I believe is her name.
I remember her.
And she would come on
from
the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, let's go to the zoo. And let me tell you, we had not been to the zoo since Sylvia was a little one. Mm-hmm. And would every Saturday push the stroller around and, you know, kill some time at the zoo. But this San Diego Zoo is something else. I mean, you are down there. It's like the whole thing is in like this huge ravine. So even though it was windy all day, like we never felt it. Like we felt it a couple of times when we got up towards the top there. But it was absolutely amazing. It was like you were in the woods the whole time. So many trees, the bamboo everywhere. It was crazy. And we did see a couple of funny things. The first was, they got the lions. They got the lion exhibit. Yeah, Andrew.
So are primates involved in one of these stories?
No.
Okay.
Wait, yes.
Okay.
But not monkeys, and there was no poop fleeing, if that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
No, we didn't see any of that.
I would have liked to have seen that, though.
We're checking out the lions, of course, and there's a female lion perched up on this like high platform, and then there's like a walkway, a little ramp, and then down below there's the male with this big old mane, and then we're walking throughout the park, but they got buses that come by, and the way they have this park situated is that roads come behind the exhibits, and you have double decker buses, and there's a guy talking and they're explaining what's going on for people who just wish to be schlepped around the zoo.
It's a lot of walking.
It is.
And it's
we got in a lot of steps.
Very hilly.
It's huge.
And so
it's massive and it's hilly.
If you're an older person,
it's a
nice
thing that they have.
You know, not able at that particular time, you're not going to be able to do it.
Right. Well, this bus pulled up, and I guess this male lion heard the announcer talking because all of a sudden he gets up.
He put on a show.
He
for the
stretches.
Bus.
He starts prancing up the ramp.
True.
He goes right up to where the female is laying down and she's in the prime spot, right? She's like front and center. That's like center stage. She's up high where everybody can see her.
There's like a sunbeam hitting her too.
Exactly. He just stands there, gives her a look.
And he gave her a lick first.
Oh, did he?
We're all like,
there was oohing and aahing from the crowd.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he gives her the look. The female gets up. Walks, does the walk of shame down the plank to the lower position, and then the male sits in the position of power right there.
And then the human primates broke into applause, and the human males were particularly excited.
We were like, yeah, that's
the
right.
The men were excited.
You show it. So that was pretty funny.
Because the reality of our lives is probably exactly the opposite.
Yeah, the opposite. You know it more than anybody else. Yeah. I don't believe you were just talking to us about that. And then we saw, so that was fun.
We saw a guy at a restaurant and he did that lion's behavior.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So we saw a guy who honestly, Andrew, could have been like mafioso.
He was a dead ringer for Paul Sorvino, the mob boss in Goodfellas.
Mm. He was dressed very well. His wife was dressed very well. Mm-hmm. They were older. Yep. Might have been 70, in their 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
They come into this restaurant and she takes the booth so that she can face outward to look at the rest of the restaurant.
Right.
He makes her change places, so he has his back to the wall.
He stands there and like motions for her to get up and move to the other side so she can stare at him and the wall, and he can have the nice view.
And he can have the view
of the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then he proceeded to take the big giant napkin and stuff it into his collar.
But that's a guy who's got the lion move down pat.
He does. Yeah. He does. She got up and did
it. She got up and moved.
Do you do that, Andrew? Do you stuff the napkin down in your collar?
There's no way he does that.
No, I mean, every once in a while I might if I'm eating something
super messy.
Yeah.
Like lobsters, and if I'm if I'm in really nice clothes and I'm at a meal or something like that, I might do that.
Okay. He was in very nice clothing.
He was in nice clothing.
But the meals were not messy. Too messy at that restaurant.
He got the muscles.
Oh, that's
so there
messy.
Was a little messy.
Yeah, oh, okay.
He did get the muscles. I didn't notice that.
You did notice.
But the other funny thing at the zoo was the fossa. Now, Andrew, do you know what a fossa is?
I do not.
Well, let me read you the description of what the San Diego Zoo put on the placard there. It said, the fossa is not a cat nor a dog. End sentence. that was it. It's from Madagascar. Not a cat. No, it looked like a hairless large cat dog, really.
It had
it
fur.
Like. Did it?
Short fur.
Mm-hmm. But it did say what this animal eats. And what this animal likes to eat is the lemur, which is, you know, and we've been looking at lemurs all day. And then Sylvia kind of taps me on the shoulder. She said, look at the enclosure behind us. And I turn around, and it's the lemur enclosure directly behind us. So imagine you're the fossa, and all day long,
you're smelling lemur.
All you are smelling and looking at are the lemurs in the enclosure directly across from you. And then I'm thinking about this. Imagine the poor lemurs.
I know,
who
smelling
spend
the predator.
All day smelling their predator.
I guess you get used to it.
Do you?
Hmm.
You get used to anything.
I mean, I don't know enough.
I think you just get used to it.
I don't know enough about animals to know.
But I did notice because the wind started coming from the lemur
right. oh,
direction.
Yeah. And then that's when the fossa got up.
And the fossa started like sniffing the air and pacing and looking anxious, like ready to go.
Trotting back and forth.
Like
oh, is this dinner?
Food.
Dinner ready? Okay,
I smell food.
Great. Let's go.
The
but what
fossa,
it just seemed to me just to torment the poor fossa.
It kind of looked like a mountain lion a little bit to me.
That's F-A-S-S-A, if
oh,
you'd like to
I
look
thought it
up
was F-O, like Bob.
It's F-O-S-S-A.
It's F-O-S-S-A.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like Bob Fosse.
A
maybe
little
he likes
bit,
to choreograph dances.
And I Googled it. I was looking to see what its Latin species was.
Mm.
But I think it's called Cryptoprocta ferox.
That's why
sure.
you were Googling
you
it? Because you wanted to see the Latin.
Well, I wanted to see if that would give any indication of, like, you know, feline or you know,
mm-hmm.
canine.
Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I highly recommend the San Diego Zoo. And it was interesting to hear about all the, I mean, mm-hmm. so many animals that they have are rescued. Like the grizzly bears were rescued. And now they're given a home. So it's nice to see that. We also did a lot of walking along the beaches. Now, the Airbnb we were staying at, speaking of mm-hmm. Zoos, like the second we opened the door to walk in, I mean, we were hit with this. And I'm thinking, Laura, you thought maybe back in the day someone smoked
I think
in this
it was
house.
Stale cigarette smoke, but I'm not sure.
Oh, my
sure.
goodness gracious.
It smelled
I'm not sure.
musty.
Very, yeah. very musty.
Musty. And we went to the grocery store and got these Glade plug-ins, brought them back, only to realize
we didn't get a plug-in.
No, there was no plug-in. They're just refills. Mm. So we just uncapped them
it
and
helped.
Spread them around the house. It did help. And finally, I learned the difference between San Diego drivers and any other place I've ever been to in my life.
I don't know
drivers.
The difference.
Well, you saw it on display when we were getting ready to go somewhere. I backed out of the garage.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Right? And then okay. you're yeah. like, oh, hang on. Let me run back into the house and grab whatever.
Yeah.
And Sylvia and I are sitting in the car. So I'm backing out. Now, this is a very tight squeeze to get out of this garage. So I got like I got out of the garage and then I parked. So I'm like blocking the back alley. But I'm like, I'm not perpendicular. I'm angled. So I don't really see behind me, but I'm blocking the entire alley. But it's just a back alley, and I'm figuring nobody's back there. We're sitting there. Sylvia and I are sitting there. We're on our phones. We're listening to a song. We're waiting. I guess there was some miscommunication that Laura,
okay.
you thought.
Andrew.
Well, this is what
I
happened.
Ran in
okay.
to get the little cord so that I could plug my phone in so we could have directions.
Ah, that was it, yes.
Dave yells at me, I'll pick you up around front. I yell back. Okay.
Right. Never.
They don't hear me say the word okay.
Because you were already in the garage and the garage door was closing.
But so I heard you and I yelled back okay.
So we didn't know. And I had started yelling it as the door was closing. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure.
I heard
sure.
you. And then I also didn't bring my phone with me.
Right. And you didn't have your phone. Yeah.
So I'm in the house and then I go and I walk outside. And then there's this older man who's outside of our house. And he looks at me like with joy and a big smile. Yeah. And I think, oh, he thinks I'm somebody else. I don't know. Or he's crazy. I don't know why he's doing this. But then I realize, oh, he's probably because they had rental places in the back of our place. So we had a standalone house, but there were apartments over the garage. And so I was like, oh, hey, have you enjoyed your stay? Because I was like, oh, he must just be extra friendly. So then, Andrew, I get roped into a 15-minute chat with this guy while he's waiting for his Uber driver. Yeah. And Dave and Sylvia never showed up.
No, because we didn't know.
So I had to walk all the way back.
And they sat in the car the whole time.
The whole time.
Well, I knew the second I went around to the front would be the time when, and I figured you were out front, but I figured
I was
you'd realize it. I figured as soon as I pulled
around
front.
Well, I got stuck talking to this
you'd
guy.
You'd go to the back, and it would be one of those you know, Three
too.
Stooges deals. But anyway, so finally you come out of the garage.
Yeah, and there, Dave is parked It's like Dave was in the middle of backing up and then lost interest in backing up.
Right.
And then he just stopped his car.
I was at 0.2 of a 3-point turn.
That's it, exactly.
And I guess you get in and you're like, Dave, what are you doing? There's a car
there
right
there. There was a car, like a white Tesla, just sitting there waiting for them.
He just was just sitting there. Hmm. Like, who does that? He's sitting there waiting. And I know he's waiting because I pulled, after that, I pulled out of the 2-point and just pulled off to the side and he zoomed around me. Without, but like, if you're waiting for someone and...
Wouldn't you say something?
You yes. would like give a like a little tap of the horn.
A friendly tap.
It was weird. But that's, I guess that's San Diego drivers. I don't know.
Very
strange.
Yeah. California is always different to visit. Their infrastructure is just crumbling.
Oh, yeah, a lot of potholes.
You know.
Yep.
A lot of the public parks aren't as quite fixed up as maybe Colorado's are. But maybe that's the way the whole country is going. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it is too.
What a good time.
I don't mean anything politically by that.
No.
Don't read into it.
Well, you know, you may stay away from the politics, but I will tell you, like, we've lived on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And the taxes and stuff I would pay on the East Coast are up there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, whether it's Pennsylvania or New York State or Maryland... Or New Jersey. I mean, you're paying a lot in
Maryland,
in
the
taxes.
Property tax.
Yeah, Maryland, the property taxes.
Yeah,
are crazy.
I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Right? But when you go and look at, like, for example, when I had small kids in Maryland, there was almost not a single, let's say, playground that was decent. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, all that money.
You're right.
But yet, when you look at a lot of the public facilities,
they're not there.
Not really. And
the bike trails and all that kind of stuff, they're not there.
Well, there are some bike trails, but they're rare. And even like community centers and stuff. But out mm-hmm. here in Colorado, the community centers are amazing.
They're everywhere.
The playgrounds are amazing.
Yeah.
Even counties have sale. Like Jefferson County has an uptick in their sales tax that goes towards that too. So it's definitely a priority for living.
And then
out
they
here.
Also have the bike paths out here. Like when we they're first amazing. Moved out here, I couldn't believe how many bike and walking running paths there are. And it's just it's really
couldn't
nice.
Believe it. You do get
spoiled.
You can get anywhere.
Yeah. So large tax dollars is not necessarily. Equal.
Right.
That's a interesting.
Good, point. Good public amenities.
That's really interesting.
But Andrew, that's what we have been up to. What's been going on in your world?
Well, things are, busy. We also went on vacation the week before mm-hmm. the Medicuses. So we had a good trip to Mexico, and maybe I'll share one incident.
I feel like I heard a brief mention of this by Dave, and then he stopped telling me so I could hear it.
So we had a great vacation. We stayed at a new place. It's only like a year and a half old.
Okay. Like a house or a resort, right?
An all-inclusive resort.
Okay.
And so basically, we had a suite with an attached room. Amazing. Kitchen, 3 full bathrooms.
Wow.
2 hammocks on the patio.
Wow. Yeah.
Beautiful view of the pool.
Play Andrew's music here.
I mean, and this is all inclusive. Like, you can eat whatever you want. You can drink whatever you want. It's all inclusive. Hmm. Now, we didn't get in until 8 o'clock. We ate a late meal. So we got in late. We had a late meal. And when we booked this, we took flights that were significantly cheaper. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like, our outbound flights were maybe $300 a person. But if we had taken another flight, it might have been $700 or $800 a person each way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so multiplied times 5, you're saving $400. I mean, that's a couple grand.
Oh, yeah.
But we
got
in.
With that many kids, it adds up.
So we got in at 8 o'clock. In any case, I wake up the next morning. I'm on vacation mode. I'm ready to go. And vacation mode for me is, I don't like sleeping. I'll read books and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. I don't like sleeping or anything. So I'm up. At like 6:30 in the morning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, man, I'm going to go out there and
attack the day.
I'm going to
get it done.
So I get up there. I call a few people that are on the East Coast, mm-hmm. East Coast time, because they're up already. Give them a tour.
You get a tour, Dave?
Did not.
I would like a tour. We need the tour next time. Yeah,
oftentimes, he will give us a tour, but did not get the tour.
So you got to answer the phone next time, damn it. And so, and so basically,
I was at work.
I'm.
That's true. I forgot.
Yeah. I'm in a great mood. I'm on cloud freaking 9. I go reserve a few. I go and put some stuff out on some chairs.
Mm-hmm. At the pool.
At the pool.
Sure.
Reserve a few chairs. Mm-hmm. I sit there on those chairs for 10 minutes. Nobody comes over. There's staff walking around. Nobody says anything. So I'm like, okay, I guess this is okay. Mm-hmm. I see other people doing...
I feel like that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Doing apparently the same thing.
Yeah.
So then I go, I work out for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I grab my morning coffee.
Getting it done.
Grab my morning coffee.
Yeah.
And I come on back down there. And I'm, you know, and I've got my snorkel, my mask, my fins. And I'm thinking, I'm basically, you know, I'm going to go jump in the ocean and I'm going snorkeling.
Oh.
I mean, I'm on cloud freaking nine here.
Sure.
Got up, worked out. You know, I'm ready to go. So I come back. All the stuff on the chairs is gone.
Oh, we got a criminal running
around.
What
kind of stuff did you leave there?
Snorkels, masks.
Like hat.
So what it turns out is they don't let you reserve chairs like this. Now, this is still like 7 in the morning.
Huh.
There's nobody.
There's no one there.
There's nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, did I pick some prime spots? Yes, you're darn right.
I would have too.
You're darn right.
But so, that's all part of the dance. That's what you do. You get up early, you go down, you reserve
your
spot.
Are you supposed to pay for the spots?
Yeah, we'll get to this.
Okay.
So anyways, so what happened is security took it all.
That seems like a ripoff.
And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, and they're like, well, you have to go to the front desk and get it back. I'm like, no, you took it. Bring it back to me. You know?
What was that one book of Andrew recommended? The Ugly American?
No. And I get it. So anyways, so then security comes and talks to me. Like I said,
Now security.
Send your supervisor.
No.
Well, no, I asked for him.
Is Katie blissfully asleep?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're all missing out on this.
Poor Katie. I'm glad she's missing out on this.
But...
you gave them the old go get your supervisor.
Yeah, yeah. They treated me like a criminal. I mean, like their whole handling of the situation
was not well.
And again, there's nobody. It's 7 in the morning. You know, there's
what's the harm of there's putting 500 a chairs out?
There's 500 chairs, and it's like,
huh?
You know, it's like, you know, what's the deal? And they're like, oh, you're only allowed 20 minutes. And I was like, I was maybe gone 25 minutes. It's like really? And I sat there for 10 minutes.
What?
Did they like mark your car? Like, what did they chalk it?
Yeah, they put like a little chalk mark on there.
Well, and so what it turns out for this particular resort, the people that own condos there, they get a black wristband.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
And if you are just staying as a guest of the hotel, you get a white wristband.
Oh.
And so what it turns out is, all the prime spots always end up getting reserved by the black wristband people.
Okay.
And so the real mistake I made was
not buying a condo there.
Well, is thinking that I was going to get reserved for my family a prime spot, but you couldn't get it. And so then,
so you can't reserve at all with the white wristband?
Not in that area.
So all inclusive doesn't mean all inclusive.
And so we've never been to a resort where you get treated like a second class citizen.
Hmm.
And it was annoying as hell.
I bet, yeah.
As far as that, and I had a conversation with the guys. I'm like, look, I get it. You guys are in a bad, tough spot. I'm like, but you know, we have two rooms here, and you know, it's like we get treated like a second class citizen.
But how would you feel if you owned a condo there, and here come these renters lolling around?
But I've also seen it where, and I've seen other resorts where they've got the same situation, and it's just simply. For most of it's first come, first serve, unless you pay for a reservation.
Yeah.
And then you could pay for a reservation, but...
Why don't you get you a nice Airbnb?
Now, here's another question.
You don't have to worry about
it. Well, not probably in that part of Mexico. Another question, though, are they... Like, how can you tell that these are for black wristband people? Are they, like, blue towels there?
You could just, like, you observe the behavior.
So that's the only way to tell. So you would have no way of knowing.
No, and then, like,
that's
as an example...
Fair. That's not fair.
I sit down in an area where I should be able to get a chair.
Yeah.
Nobody comes, says hi to me or anything, sets up my chair. Somebody with a black wristband sits down next to me.
Oh.
And within 60 seconds, somebody's there. Mm.
They need to put a sign or have, maybe the chairs are blue in this area.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Or just basically say for this one pool.
Yeah.
And to be honest, but it was a great vacation. It was a great trip. It was a great resort. The food was great. The only annoying thing was like the way they handled.
Yeah.
Like reserving the chairs
That's
and stuff around the pool.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, how about that?
Did your kids have a good time?
The kids had a great time, but what they loved more than anything is we took a ferry to an island, and we went to this just beautiful, pristine beach, white sand, just absolutely gorgeous. And the highlight of the trip for them wasn't the 5-star resort we were staying in. It was the day that we spent at that beach where they could just basically hang out on the beach and stuff like that.
I love hanging out on the beach.
Yeah, and Sylvia's highlight was poking around the tide pools at low tide and just discovering the different creatures and messing around there all day. That was amazing.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to it. Our guest for you is Scott Carson. He's got a new book out now. It's called Lost Man's Lane. And man, oh man, did I love this book. I know, Laura, you read it too. You also love this one. This is a big, juicy, old school horror novel that's also a coming of age story with supernatural elements and also a lot of snakes. Lots and lots of snakes. This book centers around high schooler Marshall Miller, who one day is pulled over by a cop for speeding, ironically, just a couple of hours after getting his license. I know, Andrew, you don't want to hear that, as you were just telling us about Dashiell getting ready to get
I can't believe Dashiell's going to start driving soon.
License. But imagine he gets...
That's crazy.
Well, imagine... Yeah, we'll get to that later. But imagine Dashiell's driving down the road, just got his license, gets pulled over by a cop... Cop comes over, as happens in this book, to Marshall. The cop starts harassing Marshall. Marshall looks over to the cop car, sees a young woman in the back seat, distraught. Obviously, he's been arrested by this cop. Cop drives away. Later on, Marshall finds out that this woman has been reported missing. Also, the police department, now they don't have any idea who this cop is. This leads to Marshall hiring a local private investigator or contacting one, and he ends up actually interning with this private investigator, and they begin investigating this missing woman. The book is set in the late 90s, and there are lots of references to horrific events from the past, including Columbine, the whole book takes its time working a creepy path towards a big finale. This one just felt like a classic Stephen King book crossed with John Irving. Lots of humor in it, lots of strange otherworldly events. This is one of those books you just don't want to end. It's by the way, right now on Goodreads, 4.52.
It's very, very good.
It is.
It's funny.
So
it's real funny.
Yeah.
So I was watching a series, I think it was like Friday Night Light Murders.
really?
Nightlight
murders. And it's about murders related to
football?
Cheerleaders, football players, coaches, and things like that. And I think this is where I saw it. But there was one story in there where somebody was posing as a police officer. And that's what it was. There was a cheerleader. But it's called Friday Night Light Murders. And I can't remember what it was streaming on. But, you know... There was a psycho that was basically posing as a police officer.
They're out there.
Yeah. People would pull over.
Yeah.
And that was it?
Yeah.
That is it. It's scary.
It's scary.
It's
they got
really
that power.
Scary.
Anyway, I love this book so much and really love chatting with Scott. So here now, talking about his book, Lost Man's Lane. This is Scott Carson. I met a gypsy and she hit me to some life game to stimulate and activate the left and right brain. Say, baby boy, your only phone can add your last cut. You focus on the past, your ass will be your has what. That's one to live by, or either that's one to die to. I try to just throw it at you, determine your own adventure, Andre. Got to what station, here's my destination. She got
I'm in Bloomington right now.
Oh, you are.
Last time we spoke, I was in Maine, if I recall correctly.
Yeah,
you were.
And you had to get into a car, I believe, and drive to where you had better cell service. It was quite the.
That sounds like Maine, yes.
You watching, I did see a couple of IU references in the book. You watching any of the March Madness? Are you excited? Are you pumped up?
It's a tough year for Indiana sitting on the outside, but I cannot tell you how delighted I was to watch Kentucky get beat last night.
Wasn't that
fills me with joy.
Yes. Yeah. That was awesome.
That kid who hit the 10 threes for Oakland, he was just insane.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think I heard this morning he shoots like 90% of his shots come from behind the arc. They just get in the ball and just
shoot. That's all he does, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's very
specialized. It was fun, though.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And, you know, Scott, let me tell you what else is fun. I'll call you Scott. We'll call you Scott for the purposes of the
podcast. Yeah, for this one. I'm still getting used to it.
Yes. What else is fun is your new book. My gosh, what a story you tell. Lost Man's Lane. Now, listen, although, by the way, Scott, next time, maybe talk to your agent, because this book just cries out to be called Snakes on a Lane. Can we make that? Is it too late to change the title of the book?
I haven't heard that, and now I'm going to use that, so I'm stealing it.
It's got to be.
I'll let you know that right now.
It's got to be Snakes on a Lane. Listen, Lost Man's Lane, this is a story of Y2K, Speed Queens, and Al Michaels. Scott, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
You know, it really was my hometown and a lot of experiences I had growing up, some really good, some, you know, much more serious on the positive side and some of the more lighthearted. I had the incredible opportunity when I was in high school to work. I got an internship with a private detective named Don Johnson, great PI name. And he was a wonderful mentor. Still a good friend today. I ended up working with him part-time through college, and then it was my day job until, you know, writing became the full-time career. So it was a chance to go back and sort of reflect on that era, and then on, you know, the more serious and more tragic side, there are some real crimes that occurred, the Ben Smith shootings that are in the book, mm-hmm. that, you know, he was a white supremacist who went on a multi-state murder spree on the 4th of July, 99, and came through my hometown. So that was one that I wanted to use as a device for the tone of the book without allowing him to have the story in any way.
Right.
No, you had a lot of different things that happened in that year that I hadn't remembered. So it was interesting when you lay them out like that and you're like, oh, I'd forgotten about that. And I had completely forgotten about what had happened with Ben Smith. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was really, the research was fascinating to me because I came to it with the thought of, this isn't that long ago, you know, so I don't really need to refresh myself except for the granular details. And then you go back through newspapers, both local and national, and realize how much I'm forgetting. But also, I was realizing how bad we are at predicting things, at anticipating what the big story is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what was on the front page that did not pan out versus what was getting, you know, a little column on like A32 in the New York Times that ends up being massive. And the book is kind of bookended by the Columbine Massacre and 9/11. And then in the middle of that, on the local level, you had the Ben Smith incident, but you also have Y2K.
Yeah.
And I think now we all hear Y2K, and I mean, my natural response is to laugh.
Right,
think,
of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing happened, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But then what I didn't realize is, oh, if people hadn't spent billions of dollars and several years working to prepare for it, it wouldn't have been apocalyptic, but it would have been, you know, much more serious. So that, and again, that surprised me because to me, it just was like this joke that never panned out.
Yeah, I remember my dad had to go in. He worked for the state of Maryland, and he had to go in and like be there at midnight just to make sure he was like a systems analyst that nothing happened.
Exactly. And my father was an electrical engineer working for Indiana University.
Oh, wow.
So we would usually go up to Cleveland on that, you know, Christmas, New Year's break area to see family. And that year he had to be back, just as you're saying, because, you know, no one knew. There were elements that I would never have known. For example, I wouldn't have remembered that the NFL actually changed their schedule to make sure.
That was true? Did they really do
that? That was true,
wow.
Yes. So it was really fun to think or to discover that what you remember about an era and an event is only 80% true. And that shouldn't have surprised me. You know, I was a criminal justice major, and the one thing that they always hammer in is no one is less reliable than the eyewitness, because the brain tries to help out and fill in the gaps, right?
Right, yeah.
So it was like a refreshing course on that.
That's funny. We live, you know, I'm in Denver right now in my classroom, but we live in Littleton. We weren't here at the time of the incident, but we live not too far from Columbine. And, you know, it's just something that haunts everyday existence out here, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you're coming up on the 25-year anniversary of that. It wasn't something I had planned. I picked 99, 2000, both because it was the era that I lived, and then it felt like an interesting sort of time capsule. But I realize now, as we approach Pub Day, everything is at this 25-year anniversary. And one of the things that really stands out to me, having been in high school when, you know, Columbine happened, was the sense, and I put the words in the mouth of one of the characters, a father figure in the book, that sense of we will never let this happen again really seemed like, oh yeah, this is the one that has gone, you know, too far, and someone, the institutions will put their hands around this in some way. And I think I close out that chapter by saying, you couldn't fool today's kids as easily. And it's, I think that is one of the, tragically, that might be one of the more accurate lines I've ever written.
We are literally 1 year to the day at my school, East High School here in Denver, from a kid shot two deans. Luckily, they both survived, but he brought a gun in and shot two deans.
But he didn't survive. The child didn't survive.
No, the kid did not. He, of course, you know, he ended up killing himself. But it's.
I think in that moment we all had a sense of things will be done. Certainly not the sense of this is going to become commonplace to the point that we have to sort of scratch our heads and try to remember which one had which death toll. I mean, that is something that I really don't believe anyone could have imagined in April of
99. No. All right, Scott, let's talk about something a little more fun.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get into some lighthearted things.
This is a fun book. This is like, it just had the feel of an old school classic horror book. It's fat. It's huge. You just get lost in this world. What about, are you a big rap guy? Now, I happen to, I just got this this shirt for...
I love it, the Nas throwback.
Just got it for my birthday a couple days ago, and you referenced Nas.
I am a rap fan, okay, and particularly good. Of that era, you know, the 90s, early 2000s hip-hop.
Yeah.
I would probably be embarrassed in conversation with anyone who really knows modern hip-hop.
Right.
You know, I'm still aware of some of it, but I drift back to those throwbacks, and I loved creating Marshall's playlist because it allowed me to immerse in, you know, Spotify playlists of that era, and also have a little bit of fun with the characters arguing over who has good taste in music and who doesn't.
Yeah.
So great. I mean, you mentioned the Dixie Chicks or the Chicks now, all kinds of great stuff. And then you mentioned Napster. I had forgotten all about Napster.
That was one. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I would have forgotten the exact, you know, day that it debuted. But I remember having these debates with one friend. I had one friend who early on, I mean, all of the rest of us just thought this is the best thing ever, because so much of our money was going to CDs, right? And then now it was all free. And I had like one friend who was smart enough to think this could be bad for the artist. We're all like, no, what? Come on. That's crazy. It's like the radio. It's got to be good. Now I'm over here sending, you know, frantic emails to my publisher. Like, did you see this piracy site? It's awful. It's terrible. Shut it down.
That's funny.
True. Yeah. This is also just a coming of age story. And I love coming of age stories, especially when they're aimed at adults and it's not a YA. Nothing against YA. I read YA too. Have you ever written a coming of age story before?
No, and I love the book. So that's exactly why I ended up here. I'm huge fan, obviously, of Stephen King. You know, The Body comes to mind. But the book that there were two books that I had sort of said as I know I'm not going to achieve this. I'm not good enough to achieve it. But what I wanted to shoot for, it's A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving.
Love that book.
My all-time favorite books. And then a book called Boy's Life by Robert McCammon.
Such a great book, yeah.
And one of those is, you know, has a much longer arc. A Prayer for Owen Meany takes them from childhood all the way through to adulthood. And Boy's Life is more of that adolescent story. And I thought, okay, if I can land something that feels similar in that moment where of late teens, because I think it's such an interesting and fun emotional moment where you feel as if you're a fully formed adult. Mm-hmm. And you know, you chafe at anyone who suggests that you are not, but you aren't. And then also those people who come into your life who are not your parents, and they treat you like an equal. They give you some, you know, adult agency in the world. They're really huge influences. And so that's what Noah Storm brings to Marshall Miller, my protagonist. He's the guy who treats him as a man. And Marshall he doesn't know who his father is. That's a huge part of his identity. You know, he's searching for his literal father, but also he has the gap where the father figures are very important to him. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed writing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to really talk about it because it's kind of a spoiler, but there was this. I did that. A Prayer for Owen Meany came to mind to me while I was reading this. So,
I love hearing that. Can't say enough about that book. And the way he used the actual backdrop of the times it informs the novel and it adds texture, but it's not anchored in those events. And that was exactly, I thought, okay, that's the right way in here, where you're capturing the nostalgia and, you know, refreshing the well of memory, but the coming of age story is universal. You know, you can set that in the 60s, the 90s, or, you know, yesterday. And I think we all tap into the same sort of emotional memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, another thing you do really well in here that John Irving also, all of his books, I think, have this too, is humor. So throughout this book, even though it is horror, it's funny.
Oh, it's
and
so funny.
The character of Jake is hysterical. Dave wants to talk to you about another character who's also hysterical.
Weller? Do we have some Weller questions?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We'll get to Weller. Don't you worry. We'll get to the Weller. Yeah.
There is a scene, though, and it's so cringy and wonderful, where Marshall is at the climbing gym with Jake, and he is not admitting that he has no idea how to do a climbing wall, and he's trying to go for the big one. And Jake's girlfriend, Marshall's friend, is there. And it was so hilarious and funny. And I kept having to pause and tell Dave, like, oh, I'm at this scene. Oh, yeah, it was awesome. Was that fun?
That is. I'm so, so delighted to hear you highlight that scene because, you know, I've written more than 20 books now and I don't know how many scripts. And if you put a gun to my head and said, what was your favorite day as a writer? I would say it was the day I wrote that scene because
it's so great.
When it's going really well, it becomes something you feel like you're transcribing and not, you're not putting words in the characters' mouths or telling them what to do. And that was one of those days where, it's a long thing. It's a set piece. I don't know.
Beautiful.
The first draft, it might've been like 20 pages. I trimmed it down. But it just all came out. It was, you know, like smoke coming from the fingertips. And I was laughing writing it. And then I sent it to my wife. And I was like, does this match the tone of the book? Or was this just indulgent? And she was like, oh, God, you've got to keep it in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, my editor might say pull it. And when my editor read it, she emailed that she was laughing on a plane and her son was with her, and she was handing him pages saying, you've got to read this. So it passed the test, but I love that it worked for you too.
But I mean, you had me at the big baggy jeans that he was wearing. 90s jeans. Yeah.
Kind of the wardrobe set the tone.
It did.
I was one. I just read it like this. I had one hand over my face, like peering between. I was like, "Oh no,
stop, and be like, "Oh, Marshall."
And it just kept going. It was great.
What Irving does so well, or any the comedy writers who I really love, and even when it works on TV, I think of something like Freaks and Geeks, which is a show that I loved.
Oh yeah,
is when the audience is out in front of the character. This works for scares, by the way, too, but it particularly is effective for humor when it's like you can feel the bad thing that's about to happen and the character just marches cluelessly toward it. It works to scare, but it definitely works for laughs because it's that, like, you cringe. Either way, you're having, you know, you kind of tighten up for them.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, Freaks and Geeks did that a lot, and it they was really awesome. Did. Yeah.
I love awkward humor. It's one of those, I think it's, I feel awkward so much of the time in virtually any social situation where I'm already like one step backward thinking, I wish I hadn't said that. Like, can we start? Can I get a revision, a rewrite, a second pass on this? So it's fun to lean in with fiction.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. Someone who doesn't feel awkward, let's talk about my favorite character in the book, Marshall's buddy Weller. He's this real, he's like a bro dog. He's this jock. He calls himself the Weller.
The Weller.
When he
yes.
called, when he called Marshall and Marshall's mom, you know, the mom
yes,
answers,
I love that.
And she's like, who is the Weller? Who is oh, he had the feel. Tell me if I'm accurate on this, but like he seemed like just when we first met him, he's like this throwaway character, and then he grew and he evolved and he became this entity unto himself. Did you always imagine this role for him in this book?
That is the most spot on read. That's uncanny. So he was the name Sean Weller was just he was a placeholder name. I didn't think we would ever meet him. I actually just thought he was going where I was going with the opening scene with him. I needed some character to have a keg party where these high school kids right. would yeah. meet up. And the only thing that was going to happen in that scene was Marshall would learn this key detail about what he thought he saw with the cop. Right. So I'm trying not to spoil it, but yeah. that was it. And then I wrote the moment where he approaches the keg. And then Weller came on, and as soon as he started to speak, when you say he's a force unto himself, he really, really was. And then he absolutely took over the book. And man, I have a story I wish I could share, but there's no way to share it without completely spoiling things.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil it. Yeah,
I have to say that the Weller really resonated for Stephen King. And Stephen King read an early draft of this, and he is, if you look in the acknowledgments, I thank an anonymous reader.
Oh.
And that reader is Mr. King.
Oh,
but
wow.
The Weller owes Mr. King a debt of gratitude. So
I think we know. Yeah. Yeah. I think we know. And I'm glad. It was though, yeah. Dave, what you had said about Weller, it was the phone call that he makes. Yeah. And then Marshall's mom is like, the Weller? It's Weller? Yeah.
Someone whose first name is The?
The?
Yeah. So great. So great. There's another character in the book, less funny, but very important. The librarian, Mr. Dwig. Is that how I pronounce
it? Yeah.
And there's a great line in the book, quote, the internet couldn't match a librarian. Did you base him on anybody? Did you have any favorite? I'm assuming you might have had a favorite librarian or a favorite library growing up.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of a librarian so much with that as I guess I'm thinking of dozens of them.
Yeah.
It was just my experience from the time I was really young. The Monroe County Public Library was my favorite place to be. And I would fill out all of these cards for interlibrary loans to get these old books that, you know, my dad had read and he remembered, but they didn't have in the collection. And I mean, I was always, you know, up to some sort of weird thing, whether it was wanting to get an internship with a private detective, where I started my sort of search for that guy in the library. And there was always a librarian who was, you know, willing to go make that extra step and put in that extra time. And I had great English teachers and I had great writing mentors outside of school. A sports writer named Bob Hamill comes to mind. He was, you know, someone who went so far out of his way for me. So there are a lot of influences wrapped up in that character. But I think the line in the book is, librarians can change lives. They might even save some. And, you know, I absolutely believe that.
Very true. Something else that I noticed in this book, there's a lot of like, and I love this when a good horror book does this, a lot of subtle foreshadowing it in the book that just hints at these darker things to come oftentimes at the end of the chapter. Is that something that you intentionally do, or is that something that comes later on?
It was something that was there from the first draft of this book because I knew I wanted it to have the voice of a narrator who's looking back.
Yeah.
So when we're in scene, the quote present day is 1999 and 2000. But then I want the voice of the writer to be 40 years old and then looking back at this time. So I was trying to just float it through enough where it's not pulling you out of the story, but it's hopefully deepening sort of the weight of experience and offering a little bit. I think to your point, Laura, of it's not YA, but it's yeah. Speaks to that era. That's the voice that I think separates it from YA a little bit. It's that added, and that's what Robert McCammon did so well, I thought, in Boy's Life. Mm-hmm. And I obviously, in A Prayer for Owen Meany, Irving has those interludes.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's cutting to Toronto it's like, what would Owen Meany say?
That's right.
And I always loved those portions, those interludes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the mom is super powerful in Owen Meany and in your book too. And the golfing, I enjoyed the golfing that she and Marshall enjoyed. Are you a golfer at all? Did you golf with your family?
No, I'm terrible at golf. I mean, I play a little bit. I'm atrocious. And my mother, I don't think, has ever held a club. Maybe at putt-putt, definitely. But I know she's never taken a golf swing. So a few people have already asked me, like, so was your mother a really good golfer? And I'm thinking about just beginning to lie because it would embarrass her so much. She was a first grade teacher, you know, very
awesome,
good, honest person. So I think if I just begin to lie in public and tell people that she could still beat them today, it would be a lot of fun.
Cool.
I think you should do that. Yeah.
All right, Scott, it is now time for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Oh, I loved Monsieur Spade on AMC. The Clive Owen throwback to the Sam Spade character. I thought it was great.
Oh, I have not heard of that one. That's a good one.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Castle Rock, Maine. I've got a lot of friends out there I'd like to chat with.
Oh, man. Yeah. A lot of them.
Me too.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
How about this, Scott? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
I mean, Jaws is top of the list, rewatchable for me. And I got the pseudonym Scott Carson I took from the movie The Natural, which I have seen I don't know how many times. So.
Oh.
Scotty Carson is the scout in The Natural who's never on screen, but he's the one who sends Hobbs up, and you never know if he's a good guy or a bad guy. You're not sure who he's working for.
I love a good baseball movie. Is that your favorite baseball movie?
Yeah, there are a bunch in that mix, but I'd say that's probably top of the heap.
Yeah.
I gotta go pull Durham.
How about a... Yeah. All right. Enough with the baseball movies.
Okay, all right.
I do like the Brad Pitt movie and the Jonah Hill, and I can't remember the name of it.
Moneyball.
Yeah.
Yes, I love that one. How about one of your top five or top favorite books?
Impossible. So I guess I'll go back to the influences for this book. Boy's Life was huge. I mentioned A Prayer for Owen Meany. There's a book that I think kind of slid under the radar called One Mississippi by a writer named Mark Childress, which is a great coming of age story, a kid who moves from Indiana, ironically, down to Mississippi. And then I somehow had not read John Green yet. I finally got around to Looking for Alaska, which I thought was just fantastic. That boarding school story, I loved that.
He's an Indiana guy too.
He's an Indiana guy, yeah. I'm embarrassed to say I had not read him yet.
Yeah, he's delightful. Mm-hmm.
How about this, Scott? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No, I have it. My go-to karaoke is the exit sign. I cannot get out of the room fast enough. And that is a service to the audience, not to myself.
All right, you're not getting out there doing NY State of Mind, Lil Nas, no? Okay.
I have to confess, the last time I had any fun doing karaoke, I would have been probably 17 years old. It would have been at the Indiana University Memorial Union Bowling Alley. And I rapped flawlessly, I might add, Andre 3000's part in Rosa Parks.
Wow. So
that was not as easy as it might seem. Okay. He's got a pretty fast flow.
Yeah, he does. He does.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
Currently getting into a galley of Stephen King's new collection, You Like It Darker, which comes out in June.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to get my hands on that one. Lucky you. You get it early.
Lucky you. Yeah.
He has a story in there called Rattlesnakes.
And
coming off there, you know, there are some snakes in Lost Man's Lane. I have a serious snake phobia. So, combine Stephen King and a rattlesnake. And I'm not sleeping well, but that's okay.
Well, Scott, listen, thanks for hopping on. I cannot tell you how much this is, my favorite book in quite some time that I've read, Lost Man's Lane.
Wow, thank you.
It is so, so good. And really, really just appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. It's my pleasure. And it's a lot of fun to talk to people who actually read the book so thoroughly pick up on what I'm trying to do. That means a lot.
Awesome.
More than you know.
Very good.
It was awesome. Your characters really are alive. Yep. It was great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your day.
There it goes.
All right.
It's the Carson. The Carson, everybody. The Carson.
Carson.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thanks so much to Scott Carson for hopping on. Check out his book, Lost Man's Lane. It is excellent, excellent. Okay, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Yeah, let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss on a church.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called The Teacher by Freda McFadden.
Oh, yeah, Freda McFadden, Sylvia's favorite author.
Well, not really, but kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, Freda McFadden is a lover-hater. She's crazy popular. She's Kindle Unlimited writer, although I know her books are at Target and at the airports, I assume. She is a practicing physician who specializes in brain injuries also.
Freda McFadden is?
Yeah, so Freda McFadden is a pen name.
Wow.
So, like, crazy overachiever, I assume.
Yeah, seriously.
Isn't that strange?
That is strange.
Yeah. So I've read a few of her books.
I've read one of her books. Really enjoyed it.
Got into reading again with Freda
mm-hmm.
and addicted to it. And, this is her latest book, and I don't know what's going on. And I really enjoyed it. So her chapters are short. Her plots are fun. You mm-hmm. can read this in two nights, or if you're Sylvia, you can read this in one night.
Yeah. Stay up till 4 a.m.
Well, you know, you're only young ones.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
I know. You're only true. Young ones. Yeah. At a certain point, you won't be able to stay up past 10:30. If you're Laura Medicus. So as an aside, Frida's fans, they call themselves the Mick fans. They're Mick fans.
Oh, because like Freda McFadden.
They're Mick fans.
McFans.
So okay. I think that's kind of cute.
I like that.
She's a lot of fans. Like her book immediately it's like 179,000 reviews right now. Mm. And it did not come out very long ago.
Wow.
So this book's about this book is about a pair of married high school teachers. So the wife is a math teacher. Her husband's an English teacher. They're at the same high school. He's popular. He's attractive. She's strict. She's not necessarily someone who's going to turn a lot of heads. So that's kind of the dynamic with them. There is a student at the school named Addie who was at the center of a teacher-student affair. Rumor, just a rumor. It happened last year and it ended up with the teacher fired.
Oh.
So she is in the wife's class and the husband's class this year, and the wife senses trouble with her. There's all kinds of rumors swirling about how troubled Addie is, how she lies, how she makes things up, all kinds of things going on. And also, despite the husband's popularity at the school, he's a very popular teacher, and she is not. There is something weird about the husband and his home life. So you'll sense that pretty quickly in the book. And I cannot tell you anymore because this
Rita
book is
likes her twists.
Loaded with twists.
Yeah.
I loved this one.
Cool.
I think, you know, every Frida book, she has her main character obsessed with shoes. This book is no different. Look for the shoes.
All right.
They also, all the women seem to drink copious amounts of red wine.
A lot of wine being drunk.
A lot of wine.
Books. Sure.
Yep. Yeah. She goes there. Also, my advice is don't think too hard about this one. It's a
just
really
enjoy it.
Fun
yeah.
romp, mm-hmm. and it really sticks the landing.
Mm.
It's very good. Mm. So, The Teacher.
The Teacher. That is not also my autobiography. This is
The Teacher. Yeah. And last week, the or teacher. The week before, I recommended The Women.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. With all books with starting with the.
Yes, huh? Andrew.
So there's two teachers in this book, right? The husband and the wife.
And the wife, yep.
So does the title refer to him or her?
You're going to have to find out.
Oh, that's an excellent question, mm-hmm. Andrew.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that book is recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week...
Dave Medicus.
It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you motherfuckers talk about.
I have an absolutely astounding book for you. I told you that the Scott Carson book was one of my favorite books of the year. This is my other favorite book so far this year. This is a brand new book, literally just came out, I think last week. This book is part satire, part social commentary, and all 100% genius. This is James by Percival Everett. Now, Percival Everett is having a moment right now as his book, American Fiction, was recently adapted for the cinema and has been nominated for a number of Oscars, or was. This book, James, this is a reimagining of Huckleberry Finn, only it is told from the point of view of Jim, or in this case, James. And James, in this book, he is a highly intelligent man who, when he's with his family or other people of color, he doesn't talk in the slave dialect that white people come to expect from enslaved and formerly enslaved people. They speak the Queen's English. Mm-hmm. So they have their own way. It's like, you know, white people's expectations of how they should act. That's how they act when they're around white people, which I think is really, really a clever way to start. And Everett has a lot of fun at the expense of white people in this book, particularly the scene where James gets a job singing with a troupe of like a chorus. Mm-hmm. They're in like a carnival type deal. These showmen, they're white people who perform in blackface.
Oh my goodness. Those are minstrel troops.
Right, yeah, like a minstrel troupe. And they hire James to sing along with them.
Huh.
And James actually gets into blackface to sing along with this troupe. This is just a very thought-provoking book. It is intense at times, as a lot of the book concerns itself with the way, as you can guess, black people were treated. But it is also very funny. You recall I recommended Percival Everett's The Trees, I think last year or 2 years ago, which was also very funny, yet also very thought-provoking and racially inciting in some ways. I can't tell you how great this book is. It is an instant classic. It's a must-read, especially in America right now. I hope it's an enlightening book for some people, as it underscores the humanity that we all have that sometimes some people forget about. Love this one. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And by the way, right now it is at 4.62.
Wow.
On Goodreads. It is, listen, this is just astounding. It's absolutely amazing. Hmm. You think about Huckleberry Finn and how that, you know, has received a lot of criticism for its use of the N-word. And Everett takes that story and turns it on its head here.
Did you guys ever read Huck Finn? Did you have to read it? I never read it.
I don't remember.
I read it for sure.
Recall.
We had to read Tom Sawyer, I think.
Yeah, we read Tom Sawyer.
But we didn't read Huckleberry Finn.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But read James instead.
James. There you go.
Check it out. So good. And that is my pick this week.
Dave Medicus.
Andrew
Dowd.
So my book this week is Blue Blood Mage, written by Ben Pollard. It is book one of the Duke of Montenegro series.
Oh.
And this has also a decent 4.5 rating.
Wow.
On
wow.
Boy, Frida's looking shabby. Hers was yeah. 4 stars.
So, and I've not read anything by Ben Pollard before. And
I haven't heard
to be
his
honest,
name, yeah.
I enjoyed this book so much that I'm kind of pissed that the other book isn't out yet.
Oh.
This is the first book in the series, and I got to wait for the next one.
Oh, it's so hard to wait.
But, you know, I also haven't looked to see, has he written anything else?
Mm-hmm.
But definitely Ben Pollard is a new author. And so,
good.
So basically, this book is similar to another book that I've read recently. Like, it's the setup is similar.
Okay.
But also unique in its own way. And so basically, the main character of this book is Daniel Hawthorne. And he is having literally the worst day of his life. Mm. He was married to a woman who has used him and abused him, cheated on him. I mean, you name it. She wiped her feet on him. And now he's to the point that he literally is at the edge of a cliff thinking about throwing himself off, maybe shooting himself.
Does a spaceship come along and grab him?
He's thinking about ending it all.
Okay.
And so he decides, you know what? I'm not going to do that. And so he ends up basically deciding I'm just going to, and he's a survivalist. He likes to survive. So he says, you know what? I'm just going to go see if I can survive. And so he walks, whatever, he goes to sleep in a cave and he wakes up and he has been teleported to another world, right? And the world he was in, I don't know if it was exactly Earth, but it was more Earth-like with no magic. But of course, he wakes up in a different world, in a different land, where, yes, indeed, there is magic.
Hmm.
And so what he finds is, there's a bit of a mystery, so he looks around where he is, and he finds that there was a noble family that was massacred, that were shanghaied or waylaid and massacred. They were betrayed, and he finds a note there basically saying that with the last of their magic, they basically did a summoning spell for... To capture somebody who would be a powerful mage to basically take revenge on the people that betrayed them.
Hmm.
And so Daniel finds wagons. He finds food there. It's in this really remote area.
Hmm.
And so he spends several months learning magic, basically reading all these books, you know, and learning in terms of the world. Now, the Duke of Montenegro is Daniel's character because... Daniel has basically been bestowed the title of Duke now. So he is royalty. And so not only does he have powerful magic, but he's also extremely wealthy, you know, in terms of it. And I've read a number of books where like people have like been teleported to different worlds and things like that. So, so I almost think we ought to name this genre where somebody gets like, transported from like our world to a world where magic exists. There ought to be a name.
Yeah.
There ought to be a name.
I like books like that. I know what you mean.
The telemagic genre.
But there are also books too, like where you figure out like the magicians or whatever. You feel like you figure out like you can travel through a mirror to get to another world.
Yeah.
I do enjoy those where there's like a portal that opens. Yeah. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Yeah.
So basically. And then once he is strong enough and knows enough, he starts to go on a journey. Now, of course, everybody's trying, like people don't really know who he is, but he tells them, but everything's trying to kill him. There's animals that are trying to kill him.
Sure.
There are people that are trying to kill him.
Hmm.
And the book is also humorous too. Like it's not like, it's a really good read. It's humorous. But what you find is Daniel, he does have, let's say, ideals. And he finds that, and he's trying to instill his ideals in terms of things. And he finds people that are worthy, you know, that are basically, and I want to say they're noble, but they're not noble like Daniel's noble, but they're noble in terms of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they've been looking for somebody to basically lead them. And so he ends up becoming a leader. He's got so much wealth that he ends up using that wealth to basically lift up those people around him. And of course he treats people fairly and equitably, which is completely unusual.
Hmm.
Now, this world is also a bit of a like matriarchal society, and and people think that like most men are like stupid, they can't do anything, they don't, men don't understand economics.
Oh, it's a reverse.
Yeah. And so everybody expects, well, you don't have a wife, you need to have a wife that's going to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And so he's like, no, I'm not getting married. And he basically says, well, these are my standards for merit, for somebody that's married. They have to be at least 18. They basically have to have magic. And he basically says, these are my criteria.
Huh.
And they're like, oh, you're being ridiculous. I mean, you know, here, meet this 14-year-old girl. And he's like, no, I'm not interested. But everybody wants to just marry him off so he can control him.
Hmm.
So there's a little bit of, you know, hilarity that ensues in terms of everybody
forcing their daughters on them.
Yeah, and that's it. And so that's a funny aspect of the book as well. But, you know, it is a good book. I would say it's sort of, you know, I don't want to call it a bootstrap genre, but as far as him like learning magic, learning things, but he's also building up those people around him. But there's, you know, there's some revenge. You get to see him doing well. And this was just a great book and a great read. And one, I can't wait to read the next book in the series, but I'm going to also have to take a look at Ben Pollard to see.
Yeah. What else he's written.
Yeah. What else he's written. So
cool.
Book is Blue Blood Mage, book one from Ben Pollard of the Duke of Montenegro series.
Sounds fun.
All right. Spoiler alert. He hasn't written anything else.
This is his first book.
Oh, wow. Good find, Andrew.
Yeah.
At least nothing else. That's,
and you see the reviews on Goodreads, and it's like 2,000 reviews on Goodreads.
That's
so
great.
For a new author,
it's a real good find.
Yep. Hmm. No author picture though. That's a little suspicious.
Why is that suspicious?
I don't know. All right. Well, let's move on. It's time now for the
audiobook of the week.
I'm sure, Dave. He's devastatingly handsome.
He is. Absolutely.
And just doesn't want us to know.
Because when you're devastatingly handsome, you don't want anyone to know.
No.
All right, my pick this week is also a book Laura read, also a book that Sylvia read. It is called...
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even know you guys had read this when I picked this one out.
We read it
a
while ago, to the point where you had to remind us what it was about, because you know how it is.
I know how it is.
Read all the time.
It is called Night Watching by Tracy Sierra, narrated by Emily Ellett. This is an excellent white-knuckle grip of a thrill ride, a story about a mother who one night hears the sound of an intruder enter her house, and she has to hide from this intruder along with her two young children. And the more she stays in hiding and the more the intruder talks, the more convinced she is that she knows exactly who this intruder is. Alternating between the current story and the backstory about her family and how she got there, this one is absolutely riveting. A real can't put downer that will leave you breathless. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is Night Watching by Tracy Sierra.
With this thought came clarity. The figure went wrong around the edges and unfurled into a stranger. It's a man. He was tall. His arms hung loose and long. His presence had the distantly familiar rancidness of something wrong and rotten she'd tasted before but couldn't quite place. Do you recognize him? Who is he? He tipped his head and stared directly at the pool of darkness down the long hallway where she stood shrouded.
Audiobook of the week!
All right, and there you go. That's the show for this week, episode 246 in the books. My name is Dave Medicus. We say thank you to Scott Carson for hopping on board and talking about his book. Check it out. It is Lost Man's Lane, and it is really, really good.
It's excellent.
Really, really enjoyed it. Let me say really one more time. All right, I'm just going to pass it all over to Laura and say see ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
It's awful. It's terrible. Shut it down.